And now it's time for the Wild Side News with your host, Sydney Wildsmith.
Every day we wake up and have to decide what to do. For most everyone, we barely have enough time to really consider the options. But think for a moment how life would be different if one day you woke up and just began walking and just walked away from all that mattered that day. Today, we're looking at the changes in course we make or are made for us, or which happen without us even knowing. It's all coming up when your voice of the earth continues here on the Wild Side News.
Welcome back to the Wild Side News. And now, Sydney Wildsmith.
One of the interesting things about internet radio is that it's radio on demand. Each of you gets to tune in precisely when you want. You choose when to listen. And although there's a new show each Thursday, for some reason, a lot of you tune in on Monday. I find that interesting. Why Monday? And because you have listeners from all over the world, although I can see what time each person logs on, I see a bar graph for every hour of the day. I can't know if the spike at 5 p.m. is because people are at home in New York and tuning in, or is it that listeners perhaps in Russia find it a good time to tune in at a very different time in their world. I'm one who likes choices. Sometimes I feel closed in when the choice is narrow. Others sense such limited choices as security or stability. I can't say why that difference exists. Today we're focusing on choices. Following the news, which is coming up shortly, we head down to Plano, Texas, and talk with the administrator of the Silverado Living Care Centers, special care facilities that cater to people who are losing their capacity to make choices, people suffering specifically from Alzheimer's. And we talk with Travis Fogel about the significance animals play in maintaining a quality and a connection for people whose connectedness unceremoniously just melts away. Then in segment two, Americans went out and expressed their choices at the polls, and now we're faced with a whole new box of choices as the balance of power shifts at the national and state levels. Will this affect the choices we have to make to deal with the choices we've made in the past, which are forcing us to make some hard choices about things which are forcing us to change? And in our third segment, maps provide almost unlimited choices as to how we chart our progress. Maps provide real facts about how to get from Dallas to Des Moines and gives us options. Do we take the freeways or the byways? We talk with an expert from MapLinks about maps of all sorts, choices and the courses they chart. It's all coming up. But first, the news. Severe storms ripped through the southern states, bringing fierce winds, driving rains, and spawning a series of tornadoes that left communities picking up the pieces to try to put their lives back in order. One tornado danced its way along a 2-mile-wide path, destroying homes and toppling trees on a 4-mile-long clean sweep of destruction. Japan continues its unfashionable and unconscionable ways as once again its whaling fleet heads out to do research on whales, or perhaps that should be, its research vessels head out to conduct deadly whaling practices destined to kill 850 minke whales and 10 fin whales in the name of science. Japanese officials claim the program and the use of lethal harpoons are needed to gauge whale populations and to study their breeding and feeding habits. Meat from the catch is sold commercially, and canned or frozen whale is sold in large supermarkets, although the taste for whale is being supplanted generally by a craving for Whoppers. This signals the launching of 4 protest ships as once again Greenpeace and Captain Paul Watson and the Sea Shepherd head out to push their way between the researchers and the whales. And meanwhile, along the coast of Japan, the annual drive hunt has begun. During the hunt, fishing boats use loud noises to herd bottlenose dolphins into shallow bays, where they are corralled into nets and killed. Some of the best dolphins are chosen to be sold to aquariums, fetching a dandy 50 grand or so for a good dolphin, which may become a superstar attraction and entertain millions of visitors during its lifetime. However, for the 20,000 or so dolphins and porpoises estimated to be killed during the hunt each year, they end up in cans to provide a replacement for the limited whale catch mandated by the International Whaling Commission, or as fertilizer. Meanwhile, in marine research facilities around the world, the communion between dolphin and human continues to awaken even scientists to the conclusion that these animals are sentient, caring, compassionate, and intelligent creatures which recognize family and friends, cry out in pain, and save lives of stranded sailors, as they have for millions and millions of years. The oceans continue to startle us with breaking news of their demise each week, and now a study reports that deep sea trawling is destroying underwater mountains that are generally teeming with life and killing myriads of fish, some of which are hundreds of years old. With global fisheries management forcing creative fishing techniques in unregulated areas of the ocean to justify fishing at all, vast stretches of the ocean are being shredded in the attempt to locate fish that can be sold in markets around the world. It is estimated that the total catch from bottom trawling was valued at $280 million, or about the cost of one day of war in a far-off land known as Iraq. And finally, a 38,000-year-old Neanderthal bone fragment has served as the source to unlock a sizable portion of the genetic mystery of the Neanderthal genome. The bone, discovered in a cave, has provided scientists with enough genetic material to unwind the lineage which humans share with a common ancestor. About 500,000 years ago, genetics split the paths, with Neanderthals heading off on one path, while Homo sapiens headed off on another. It is estimated that the last Neanderthal died a mere 28,000 years ago. Scientists have long acknowledged that Homo sapiens and Neanderthals shared the Earth for quite some time. But as so often happens, lower beings fall to the greater intelligence of the human species, which through their great intelligence may finally win the great intelligence wars by eliminating grand portions of lower life on Earth. And that's the news. And a few reminders. Next week's show falls on Thanksgiving Day, and because I happen to demand that I cook the Thanksgiving dinner, I'm taking the day off. So I've come up with a traditional Thanksgiving show, which is directed at kids and the kickoff to the holidays. Now, some of you have heard the Santa Fe Christmas Story, and if you haven't, drag the kids of all ages around your computer monitor, turn up the volume, and take a little journey. That's next week. And the following week, Dr. David Suzuki, one of the world's most admired teachers about the grand wonders of life, nature, and the earth, will be joining us here on the Wild Side News. That's 2 weeks from now. So now I choose to talk about something that almost everyone has faced or will face sometime in their lives, often whether we choose to or not. Almost everybody has a family, and they have friends, and there's probably nothing more important in reality than our family and our friends. And we have a close friend who recently, actually over a period of time, we've witnessed has changed. And whereas we didn't quite understand it all, we just assumed that she was just getting older. Recently, she fell, and suddenly there was attention brought to the fact that she was needed a little more care than people thought. And when all things were said and done, it turns out that she's actually heading into a place that is very painful for everybody, for her and for those around her, the people who care for her. She's suffering from some form of perhaps dementia or Alzheimer's, that is to be determined. But in the process of trying to help figure out where to go next, because she was in an apartment, we stopped over locally here in Encinitas to the Silverado Senior Living Center, which really focuses on people who are heading into the realms of Alzheimer's and provides exceptional care and very specific care, which is different than you'd find in other homes. So joining us to talk about that, and there's a very specific reason that we're going to be talking now with Travis Fogel, who's the administrator at the Silverado Senior Living Center in Plano, Texas. Travis, welcome to the Wild Side News.
Thank you.
Well, here's what happened, Travis. My friend walked into, who was helping our other friend, walked into the home, and she talked about that this morning and said, you know, the thing that struck me was the fact that there were animals everywhere. There were dogs, there were cats, there were birds, and I said, I get it. That is so, so interesting. And quite honestly, the Silverado communities really focus on including animals as part of their care for people with Alzheimer's or dementia. Let's start to explore, first of all, what's kind of the history of this? How long have homes been really focusing on bringing animals in?
Well, Silverado Senior Living is celebrating our 10th year of being in business. And ever since our inception, Mr. Steve Winter, our Chief of Culture, Vice President, and Co-Founder, actually was instrumental in starting the eating concept, but found out that was not a real conducive plan and sometimes not practical for many organizations. So he was instrumental in beginning our pet philosophy and pet care policies within Silverado Senior Living. And it's sort of all part of our life concept. Everything within our communities focuses around life, which stands for love, innovation, family, and engagement. And so it's pretty much been around since the inception of our company, and one of our core values is pets within our communities.
Well, that's very interesting, because a lot of people would say, my gosh, pets, that seems to add a lot of care requirements. And I'm sure there's many people who might think that people who are suffering from Alzheimer's may not even know how to effectively deal with animals. But I have to believe there's another story, and I'd like to explore that a little bit. Talk to me about why pets play such a role in your care.
Yeah, I'd love to. Pets are just vital to life in general, we feel, in our communities. They add a lot to our communities. In a sense, they give residents purpose. If they have a chore to go take a dog for a walk, in many of our communities, we even have miniature horses. We have llamas. We have even a kangaroo in one of our communities. We have many cats, fish, birds, and all those even revolve around maybe a pet club where we get out all of our animals. Our animals are actually held daily and stroked and touched. And many times that same animal gives them a sense of comfort, knowing that they belong. It also comforts our family members. Our families come to the community maybe not knowing how to communicate with their loved one anymore. Maybe the loved one cannot communicate, cannot formulate sentences, know how to communicate. But when they go with a walk with a dog in their hand and go outside in our large courtyards, all of a sudden things are better, and there's no need for communication because you're enjoying a wonderful day with a pet or an animal. And so it just brings a lot of life back to our family members where at once maybe they felt uncomfortable, could not communicate. It gives them another sense of communication.
Well, I've done a little bit of research, and I'm certainly no expert on this, although I do have instincts about it. I've heard stories that in some cases there have been people who've been very distant, perhaps even unreachable, and almost incommunicable. And then a pet comes around and something happens. Have you had a chance to witness that? That's almost like the awakening happens. Have you had a chance to witness that and tell us about that?
Oh, I'd love to tell you about that, Sydney. We see that, I would say, not necessarily a daily basis, but definitely a very frequent basis. We see where pets bring back to life our residents. For example, a lady named Sarah came to our community, and she was pretty much at end of life and ready to pass away, and wasn't wanting to get out of her bed, was not wanting to be a part of the community, and just laid in bed, and the family had just concluded that she was going to pass away. Well, Tigger, one of our little cats, decided that she was going to take up home with Sarah, and so every day that cat would sit right on Sarah's chest, every day, and eventually Sarah began to stroke that cat, pet that cat, and eventually began to come out of the community with the cat, and now even today Sarah is up walking, talking, interacting with all of our community. So things that at once gave no purpose at all to our residents, pets bring a huge purpose to them and bring value and give them a comfort level. And that's just one story of many that we have. Even our pets, our dogs, play a huge role where maybe they're not interactive, they're not smiling, have a flat affect, and all of a sudden a pet comes up and licks their hand, and begin a big smile comes over their face, and they begin to stroke the animal. And so pets play a huge role in giving life to our residents.
I'm sure you've given a lot of thought, and you've had a chance to watch this happen. But what I'd be curious to explore a little bit, and that is, what is it that you think is that connection? What is the power of that connection between the animal? How does that work with people who they don't know their, in some cases, they may not even recognize their daughters or their children. They don't recognize friends any longer. They almost don't recognize anything, but something about that connection. What, from your perspective, happens? How does that happen?
Well, I think throughout our lives, most memorable experiences, you know, things that we retain in our long-term memory are things that have an emotional attachment to them. And so as we're finding that many times people have emotional attachment to pets and animals in their past, and so it's been a good experience for them, and it's always been a part maybe of general life. Maybe they didn't have pets in their home, back in the 20s or the early teens, but they definitely had pets a part of their environment. And so it brings back lots of good, pleasant memories that are stored in their long-term memory, which is typically the last thing to go with the Alzheimer's or memory care patient.
There's another side to the story. And there's a lot of tales about how animals seem to perceive illness, seem to perceive various kinds of danger. And I'm just curious if you have a sense that these animals somehow, for example, I interviewed a paraplegic with canine companions, and he told the most amazing story. He was a gentleman who couldn't move at all, and he would have seizures at night. He'd been in a terrible car accident, and he was companioned with a dog, a puppy, quite honestly, probably 9 months to 11 months old, who'd gone through the training. And the first night he was lying in bed, and he started to have a seizure, and the dog jumped up onto the bed and lay on him to keep him, it stilled him and it kept him in the bed. It was an instinct to react. It's a most amazing story. Yeah. But that's one of many, many stories. I'm just curious to what extent you think these animals perceive that these people require a different kind of care from them.
Yeah, I think they definitely have that special sense to know when they're needed and loved. Even if a resident maybe is near death in one of our communities, you'll see the actual pets begin to wander toward that room. Like there's a special sense that draws them to know that they're needed there. And I've seen a pet, actually a dog, when a resident was outside walking, one of our trails had fallen. And a dog, I've seen them just bark and bark and bark until actually it gets a caregiver's attention to come out there to know that something's not right, something's not normal within that person's daily routine. And that's it's an amazing sense that animal has, a sense of connection with our resident. And it really brings a lot of life to our communities, even tears. You know, we've seen a lot of our family members who just get very emotional over the fact that, you know, my mom would have never wanted a cat in her home, but yet here she sets and strokes this cat and loves on it and kisses on it like it's her own child. And so it really brings a lot of emotion back to families.
One of the amazing things about animals is the fact that they, well, with some exceptions, dogs in particular give literally unconditional love. It's absolutely
true.
Amazing. No matter who you are, if that dog and you are bonded, it's always happy to see you. It's always thrilled to be with you. And these animals that you have in your facility now, are some of these actually owned by residents, or are they more or less a community resource?
Well, we actually have certain pet to resident ratios that we follow. Even by having community dogs, that doesn't necessarily include a resident's dog. We encourage our residents to bring their pet from home. If it's a dog, if it's a cat, if it's a bird, whatever animal they're used to having at home, we encourage them to bring that as a part of their daily life. But we also have our community animals, which we follow our very strict policy that we want to have, for example, a 1 to 20 in regards to a dog ratio for one dog for every 20 residents. So some of our communities may have 5 to 7 dogs in our communities because we have communities as small as, you know, 35, but as large as, you know, 130. So many of our communities have maybe 5 or 6 community dogs, and then maybe they have 3 or 4 other dogs in the community that the residents own. And then each of those pets are actually assigned responsibilities throughout the day in regards to which residents are going to be taking care of them, where the leashes are stored, where the dog food is kept, and it's always a resident engagement activity, and the residents are involved with every detail of that animal's life.
I know that people who are elderly very often just literally lose their connection with time and with purpose and other things. One of the stories that comes from the Silverado community is the fact that this really does help the elders with this special condition really start to develop a sense of rhythm, a sense of time, a sense of responsibility, not on a grand scale, but in some cases, any sort of advancement is a dramatic advancement. Talk about that.
Well, we've been seeing the case where, we get into routine many times. We try to keep with a schedule and routine for our residents. And many times if we're maybe busy and forget to take a dog out at exactly the 2 o'clock walking time, we've even had a resident come up, and say, well, it's time to walk the dog. And not knowing even any concept of time, but knows that, hey, I haven't walked the dog in a while, and I'm ready to walk that dog. So many times their routine now has been formulated, and it's got something memorable attached to it, which is very pleasant to them. And so therefore they start to develop a sense of worth and value, and that's what we instill in every one of our residents, is that they are valuable. Just because they have this memory disease and memory impairment, they're still very valuable to our society and still have great impact and worth in our communities.
Now, of course, your staff as well has to be specially trained in some respects to to accommodate both to the pets and to your community residents there. What sort of special awareness do they have to be provided with to help in this process?
Well, we have several in-services that we require for all of our associates in regards to pet care and our pet policies. And it's very important, when they come on board to even interview in the interview process, that we introduce them not only to our residents and other associates, but we interview our potential associate to our pets. And we make sure that they're going to be a good fit, because not everybody enjoys working around pets and can work with pets. And the same thing goes, with residents who are inquiring. We want to make sure that it's a good fit, because we feel like it's a core value of ours that we just aren't willing to separate with, because pets add so much value to our life and to our associates and to our residents and their families. So in part of that training that we provide to our associates in regards to pet care, we talk about how that, yes, you may be assigned the task of maybe cleaning out a litter box or feeding the horses or taking the dogs on walk, but everything that you're assigned to do and your responsibility is always about taking a resident with you and making that an engagement activity and not just your sole responsibility. And that goes from every aspect of our daily lives here at Silverado. If it's from making an errand to Walmart or to Home Depot or wherever we may go, we take residents with us. The same thing happens on any kind of responsibility we have with our pets, and we make sure that resident engagement is at the core of all we do.
Just because you're on the phone, and because I can appreciate that you're a very sensitive and dedicated soul, I've lived with Alzheimer's in my history, relatives who've gone through this. I have some elderly friends who are a mother, et cetera, And we're going to move a little bit out of the realm of animal care specifically, but what I would like to have you share is advice to people who are facing this, because it's possibly one of the most difficult things a person can face. For example, I personally am in a situation where I'm trying to figure out to what degree do I try to help someone who I'm caring for try to maintain versus realizing the limits of their maintenance. And that's a really fine line, because everyone hates to see that consciousness, that awareness, and that appreciation slipping away. Give us some advice on how we can personally deal with this, and also just practically what steps we can do to make this easier.
Yeah, I'd love to help you out a little bit, Sydney. I tell you what, memory disease is just one of the saddest diseases probably that is known, Alzheimer's itself and memory loss. Just breaks your heart, because it not only, it's something that is hard for people to grasp. It's not like something that they can see physically wrong with them. Some days they remember who they're talking to, and it's their daughter. Other days they don't remember. Maybe some days they remember to take the medication. Other days they can't. So it's very hard for us to grasp and put our finger on what's causing it. Mental illness in general is hard for people to understand. People who are diagnosed with bipolar and other diseases, we think, well, why can't they just get over it or do those kind of things? It's the same thing with memory loss. It's very difficult, and it causes lots of guilt and other emotional turmoils among families who are dealing with this memory loss, because they don't know how to handle it and know how to respond, because some days mom's doing great, other days mom's doing bad. So they get to a point where eventually they're going to be faced with a crisis, and then they're going to have to make a decision. And many times that's what they put off until a crisis occurs, or maybe until they need more care. Maybe they become incontinent and realize they can't handle those incontinency issues anymore, and so they're going to need help with those incontinency problems. Or maybe it's to a point where maybe they need medications, and the medications that the loved one is taking, they're not able to dispense, or maybe they need injections. And so there's usually a crisis, or mom falls, you know, and needs some help. At that point, they have to make a decision and have to decide if they're going to get home care or place someone in a community. And many times, what they find out is once they let go of that guilt and come to the realization that there is something wrong with my loved one and she isn't and who she used to be, and these are the best years of her life, she's not going to get better because there is no cure currently for Alzheimer's and memory loss. You're seeing the best years of her life today. There's drugs that have been shown to slow down the disease process, but nothing that actually prevents it or reverses it at this time. So once they come to the realization that they can accept some help and let someone start being the caregiver rather than that person being the caregiver, the family member can all of a sudden become the advocate for the loved one and can decide, hey, you know, mom is going to get good care. Now that mom's in this facility, look how much engagement she's getting now, how much more involvement she has. She has so much more stimulation and engagement with other residents and animals and pets and friends and entertainment. All of a sudden, this secluded life she lived at home, fearful that someone might actually know that she has memory loss, has now become something she's not afraid of and she's not fearful of. So it just opens up a whole new aspect for families once they actually get to the point where they can accept someone to help them. It's very difficult for them to get to that point, though, and many times that's just what we do. We just try to be their memory care resource, because not everybody maybe belongs at Silverado, but we want them to know that we're here to help them and be able to help them find a place that meets their needs, and that's our goal. We just want to meet the needs of that loved one and get them to where they need to be. Maybe they need home care. You know, maybe they need actually a place in a community somewhere, or maybe they even need end-of-life care, and we want to be that resource for them.
Finding the right home is a challenge as well. It's very important to be sure that you do the background and check things out. And I will have to say the fact that you have exhibited this awareness of the importance of animals in the care of people suffering from Alzheimer's indicates a true dedication to serving their needs. Tell us about the Silverado communities.
Our Silverado communities are just full of life. We try to accommodate our residents' needs. Many times in Alzheimer's dementia care, people are so worried about controlling people's behavior and their actions. Well, it's our desire that we feel like we can't control anyone. We feel like we should accommodate them. The answer is always yes in all of our communities. Whatever they need, the answer is yes. You won't hear the word no, stop, can't, you can't, don't. Those are things we don't say in our communities because we want them to be full of life and full of people who are very valued in society. They've been work productive lives, all of a sudden because they have this disease doesn't mean that they're not valued anymore. So everything we do in our communities brings life to our residents. They have country kitchens in our communities that residents can go anytime, day or night, and get food from the fridges, either be a peanut butter and jelly sandwich or a ice glass of milk, maybe an ice cream from the freezer. They are available to them 24 hours a day. We also have 24-hour life saving nursing care in our communities, which is rare. You don't find that most of the time in assisted livings and other places, along with a very low staffing ratio of 1-7, one caregiver to seven residents, and those are direct care staff. And we also have master-level social workers in our community, as well as geriatric-trained specialists. So, but even though a lot of other communities have staff, we feel like our number one thing that we do really well is that we just give life to residents. We love on them. We truly care about them, and we are committed to putting our residents first. And that comes from the top down, from our corporate office there in San Juan Capistrano, all the way to our frontline staff, our caregivers and housekeepers and laundry workers. They truly want to make a difference in people's lives and feel that they have gone away at the end of the day knowing that they've impacted a life and changed somebody's life for the better.
Silverado communities aren't located in every state. Tell us where they are. You're also on an expansion curve, and I'd like you to as well share how people can find out more about the Silverado.
Sure. Currently, we have communities in California, Utah, and Texas. We've been growing by about 3 to 4 communities per year. And if you'd like to find out more about Silverado Senior Living, you can go to the webpage at silveradosenior.com. And there it has also information about our corporate office, all of our communities, and even takes some online tours of our community.
Well, Travis Fogel, administrator with the Silverado Senior Living Center in Plano, Texas, I want to thank you so much for adding your voice here on the Wild Side News.
Thank you so much, Sydney.
For some, life is becoming one with the mystery. For others, life is a mystery. And for some, it's time to get to work and try to head off what many are saying could be a very uncertain and complicated future. Bruce Hamilton of the Sierra Club talks about the choices we need to make when your voice of the earth continues here on the Wild Side News.
Melting polar ice was a dirty look. Shrinking glaciers, a nudge. Then dying coral reefs pushed us, hard. Rising ocean temperatures and extreme weather, an uppercut. Then record-breaking heat waves hit us right where it hurts. Has it occurred to anyone that maybe the Earth is trying to get our attention?
We can still reduce greenhouse gas pollution. To find out how, go to fightglobalwarming.com. Brought to you by Environmental Defense, the Robertson Foundation, and the Ad Council.